Welcome to the Federal Executive Forum series on Federal News Network, proudly celebrating 16 years. Here's your host, Luke McCormack.
Good afternoon and welcome to this month's show. I'm Luke McCormack. During today's show, we will discuss critical issues facing government and industry leaders in rolling out 5G strategies and technologies. With me on today's show are Major General Matthew Easley, Director of Cybersecurity, U.S. Army CIO, Dwayne Forenzi, Senior Strategy Executive, U.S. Air Force Office of Commercial and Economic Analysis, Dan Dager, National Risk Management Center, Supply Chain Risk Management Initiative Lead at CISA, Brian Shrumsky, Director of Federal Mobile and Connected Solutions at Verizon, Brian Wenger, 5G Solutions Architect at Palo Alto Networks, and Brian Kennedy, Director of Wireless Solutions at CommScope. Well, this is a fantastic technology that certainly unlocks a lot of capability, high bandwidth, low latency, efficient use of spectrum. What's not to love, right? Although there are a lot of challenges with implementing a new technology like this, certainly along the lines of supply chain risk, et cetera. I'm sure we'll talk all about that. Major Easley, let me start with you at U.S. Army. Give us a state of where the Army is in regards to implementing this technology.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. It's really an honor to be able to speak to you and your audience today. For the Army, we are just at our starting point for 5G rollout in the Army. Our greatest success story to date is the start with, in combination with the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering. They have started a whole series of activities across the DoD. And our highest priority in the Army right now is our Army Modernization Initiatives, our 32 plus 3 initiatives out of Army Futures Command. And two of those, the Synthetic Training Environment and the Integrated Visual Augmentation System, are a way we're going to train our next generation soldiers on in the battlefield. But for those systems to work together, our Integrated Visual Augmentation System is one of the key 5G initiatives for augmented reality. And the Synthetic Training Environment has this virtual environment. But to make the two work together kind of in our camp posts and stations, we're going to need much, much higher bandwidth and much faster latency. And we see 5G doing that. So our first initiative is to make those two systems work together using 5G at Joint Base Lewis-McChord. And we'll really see that this synergy between the transport, that high-speed transport that 5G will give us, as well as being able to push the compute away from that edge device and onto the 5G tower, is hugely transformational, because that's gonna allow our soldiers to carry a lot less kit around with them. Since they won't have to carry that transport right next to them, they'll have that 5G system near enough to them that they'll have that transport or that compute power.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the soldier these days is a walking, multi IoT device. It's almost essentially a data center. And I would imagine this type of capability, having that real time low latency ability is going to really enable and unlock a lot of capability for the soldier. Dwayne, how about at U.S. Air Force? I know you've got an extensive background in 5G in general. Tell us what's happening at U.S. Air Force and what's happening with sort of the whole 5G community, so to speak.
All right, great. Thank you. Yes, I came back from industry a couple of years ago. I'd been working with previously Alcatel-Lucent, which is now Nokia, GE Digital, and then Cisco. And telecommunications business development internationally. And so what's been exciting in coming back to the DoD is to see the innovative spirit, a real drive to do things differently and take advanced technologies at the early stages rather than wait until they're more established. And I see that's what's happening even with 5G. As everybody knows, 5G is really still in its infancy. It's still such an early stage. But right now it's the time where we see the foundation being laid. For the Air Force, that means putting even 4G LTE first in 10 bases in the south part of the United States. And now we just give out contracts for the western part of the United States. And so it's laying that foundation where we start with 4G and then move up to LTE. Additionally, many of you know that Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida had been affected by a hurricane. And so that's an opportunity to set up the base of the future. How do we bring innovation in at the early stages and set it up and use that and then scale it across the Air Force? And so even just this past month, there's been a workshop with industry and with the Air Force and trying to bring in some innovation into establishing Tyndall Air Force Base. And so 5G is part of that concept as well, especially as we think about the flight line of the future. And we can talk more about some of those use cases as we go forward. But even there, we brought in the team from Hickam Air Force Base that's part of the DoD 5G test beds. So it's not just what the Air Force is doing. What I really like, again, coming back into the services here, is seeing how the services are really working together, especially with this DoD 5G test beds across 12 different installations and all the services.
Well, there's a deep history, of course, of having DoD sort of get on the forefront and take this technology, harden it, and make sure that it can be implemented and scaled at the scale that the DoD needs. So the rest of the community certainly thanks you for that. Dan Dagger, along with all this great capability, I read an article about the geotagging ability that you're going to have that's less than a meter. And I thought, wow, that's awesome. And then I thought, wow, I wonder what the security aspects are of that. And I'm sure you're thinking all about these things. Tell us, give us a state of what's happening from a CISA perspective in regards to the national rollout of 5G.
Sure. Luke, thank you for asking me to speak at the Federal Executive Forum. And Tom, thank you. CISA's mission right now is to protect federal networks. And we don't have the resources to reach out to every federal network and protect it individually. So we do it through collaborative risk management. We identify the risks associated with the networks that the federal government utilizes, and we apply risk management mitigation techniques to mitigate that risk. CISA applies the three strengths that it has to do that. We have the strength of stakeholder engagement capabilities, our risk management capabilities, and then our technical expertise. And we take these strengths and apply them through collaborative risk management to secure those federal networks. I sit in the National Risk Management Center, which is the planning and coordination and risk analysis engine for CISA. We can take a look at threats. We can take a look at the vulnerabilities, the probability that the threat will exploit that vulnerability. And we also look at the consequence to the nation should the vulnerability be exploited. And then we share that information with the rest of federal government, with the state governments, with our regions, tribes, territories, the local governments at the state level. Internationally, and then as well to industry, along a sector, for example, or with individual industries in the information and communications technology arena. Or we share that information to the folks that are running the national critical functions. So we help make CISA the nation's risk advisor in what we do. And our stakeholders make more informed decisions when they have the risk information. It helps them identify and address issues before they become problems with regards to deploying 5G. We have a national strategy to secure 5G, and we also have a CISA 5G strategy that nests cleanly under that national strategy to secure 5G. And we're operating in a framework with implementation plans to make those strategies a reality. And we're making, CISA is doing its information sharing role through that with that framework in mind, with those strategy frameworks in mind. For example, we do some state, locality, tribe, and territory workshops. We've met with Washington, D.C., with Minnesota, and with Utah. Our stakeholders need assistance on 5G deployments, information, best practices, technical expertise, and CISA provides that. We coordinate a series of workshops, and then we provide them with the information that they need for that 5G threat environment, for the deployment considerations, and available federal resources to achieve a secure and resilient 5G deployment. One of the other things we're doing is international engagements. As 5G connectivity becomes a reality in the US, there's a potential for an increase in untrusted vendors, equipment, and devices entering the area. Whether the vulnerabilities are malicious or inadvertent, there will still remain a need to maintain strong relationships with the international partners to communicate risks and to safeguard the flow of information. So CISA provides support through information sharing, through providing best practice information, through partnering with trusted market leaders to increase 5G standards and contributions. And then the other thing that's happening with regards to 5G is product development. It's one of the best ways to share information with our stakeholder partners. We develop a lot of products. It's an easy way to share that information. Things like the sector profile booklet, the 5G basics infographic, overview of risks that are introduced by 5G adoption. We have an excellent edge versus core paper that just came out. And then We have a 5G myths versus facts. I could go on about the products, but it's an easy way for us to share that information with others. It's public, so people can go to the CISA.gov webpage and look up supply chain, and we'll have all the products there.
What a fantastic time for CISA to arrive onto the scene, right? And have this coordinated effort. I think it's really important to do that. None of us can solve this alone. And as we have this new emerging technology, there's going to be these challenges, these risks, and mitigating this risk, identifying them, plugging up those holes, super important as we roll this capability out. Brian Shrumsky, that is your role, rolling this capability out. And I know Verizon is on a tear doing that and unlocking that capability across the country. So tell us about sort of the top line, what's going on in the 5G arena with Verizon.
Sure, thank you, Luke, and thank you to the other panelists. Very excited to always talk about 5G. I started my career over at 2G, so we're up to 5 now, which is great. And just to comment on some of the stuff that our other panelists have mentioned, right? So as Dwayne mentioned, we're currently building out the OTL1 and those 10 bases he referenced earlier, which we're very excited that we see LTE as well as a migration path to 5G. We're actively participating, as Matt mentioned, in the R&E experiments right now going under OSD and National Spectrum Consortium, as well as IWRP. And then the number one question I usually get from an operator, what is your security model, right? So just to round out with Dan, my public service announcement, we don't use any Huawei or ZTE network infrastructure is the number one question I get. But we're very excited. We're rolling out 5G very aggressively, obviously with our millimeter wave, as well as our dynamic spectrum sharing on our 5G nationwide. And the big news for us about a month ago that we can now comment is our C-band acquisition in terms of spectrum, where we invested $53 billion to roll out 5G services. And we will start that process in the fourth quarter of 2021, where we'll bring 60 megahertz of spectrum online, right? So the C-band will complement the 5G millimeter wave technology, where it will go further and wider. So we're very excited about that. Just to touch on some of the comments that were made earlier, in some ways, we are in early stages of 5G in terms of getting ecosystem or end devices out there to support things like immersive training. But in other ways, we're already well ahead, right? We have all government agencies, federal, state, and local, are actually consuming 5G today, right? So when you look at mobile handset devices, so think smartphones from Apple or Samsung or other providers, agencies are already experiencing 5G, right? So one of the things that I always talk about when I'm on these events is you will consume 5G in many different ways, right? It could be as simple as 5G mobile. You'll see 5G providing broadband access or internet access, very easy to understand. And I think what everybody's looking forward to in 5G is that immersive experience when you take all of that together and bring in edge compute when you want to do the next generation warfighter, right? Have a very immersive training experience on a testing or proving ground, a smart warehouse. Those types of things are actually under development and will actually roll out the next couple of years. But very exciting about 5G and the rollout, obviously, with our C-band. And we're all in on 5G. You can see with our most recent acquisitions, as well as shedding some assets in terms of our media products, and actually just focusing on core network and 5G being the tip of that spear.
Fantastic. And that's good to hear. Congratulations on that. Brian Wenger, how about at Palo Alto Networks? You guys are right in the middle of a 5G tear yourself and rolling out these types of capabilities, a piece of connecting it all together. Tell us about what's happening.
Yeah, thanks, Luke. And thanks to the other panelists as well. Palo Alto Networks has recently released our 5G native cloud security tool, which is there to kind of secure cloud environments and secure 5G environments end to end. We've been heavily engaged with a number of federal programs as well as some private programs as well to develop security standards for 5G. We've been heavily engaged in some of the OTAs, especially down in Albany. We've been working closely with NIST and NCCOE in their lab of excellence to develop some 5G security standards, as well as being engaged with 3GPP to help shape what their security standards and recommendations are to secure 5G environments going forward. So the stance that Palo Alto kind of takes when securing 5G networks is we look at it as a holistic ecosystem almost. We see end-to-end security as a major requirement from the user equipment all the way to the core infrastructure that's hosting the environment, all the way down to the different network functions that are provided through the 5G ecosystem and the applications that are going to be hosted and actually providing the functionality for all the user equipment on the network. So we look to secure each one of those different functions throughout the ecosystem. And our goal is to secure across all the locations, whether we're talking about securing it at the core, securing it at the multi-access edge, or even securing some of the applications that reside in the cloud. We're looking to kind of secure the entire ecosystem end to end. And that's what we're developing with NIST and with some of our 3GPP partnerships is to help come up with recommendations for all of our federal customers that are adopting 5G to make sure they're doing it securely. One of the initiatives that we're kind of going through right now is actually taking the zero trust architecture that DoD recently released and mapping that to security controls that actually can be implemented in the field to protect these environments.
It's just a perfect opportunity and great timing to have the convergence of these different capabilities, this zero trust architecture available, 5G, which, you know, some would say is has some plug and play capabilities with it, but must have a web of security over top of it to stitch it all together and make it certainly make it reliable. Brian Kennedy at CommScope, tell us about what your role is, what CommScope's role is in enabling this fantastic capability across the community.
Yeah, Luke, thank you very much and appreciate the opportunity to be a part of this panel today. And I think it's really exciting times for us here at CommScope right now. I think when you look at 5G, and I think Brian, both Brian's, you know, three of us on here today, but really summed it up quite well as to what 5G is all about. It's really more than just 5G. It's a lot of things that make it up, right? You do have the three pillars, right? The ultra low latency, ubiquitous connectivity, and massive data capabilities. But, you know, what people need to realize is building out the backbone to support this is really key. And that's what a lot of what CommScope does in many different ways. I mean, we work closely with all the major operating companies developing solutions that ensure that the 5G network has a backbone that can support the ultra low latencies and the bandwidths and the capabilities that are needed and required to really truly bring a 5G, you know, user experience to bear. You know, the wired and wireless infrastructures, combining licensed and unlicensed spectrum to support the needs, you know, when it's required by the providers. You know, everyone's talking about all the cool applications, but you must ensure that the plumbing is upgraded to enable full capabilities of that application to be met. And we're doing this in many different ways at CommScope, from inside the central office, fiber connectivity, all the way into the outside plant, offering solutions there into in-building wireless solutions. We also offer, you know, smart poles. You're seeing a lot outdoor now, densification, where all of these different technologies that combine together need to have a more aesthetically pleasing solution, since we have to densify the network to really support the 5G, you know, initiatives. So we're doing a lot of stuff in many of these areas that really help bring it all together, bring the technology together, give it a backbone and a infrastructure that it can work on for a long time to come. So we're really happy to be a part of this. And, you know, again, the 5G evolution and revolution, you might want to call it, is certainly upon us all.
And we really do appreciate your role in stitching it all together. Certainly can't have a Ferrari going 150 miles on the Autobahn and then turn off on a dirt road, right? The whole end-to-end experience has to be there. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Network.
Palo Alto Networks is proud to announce the industry's first 5G native security solution for the federal government, built to secure highly distributed cloud-native 5G networks. 5G networks enable new enterprise use cases, allowing for industrial-scale lot networks with ultra-low latency, mission-critical reliability, and a high degree of mobility. For more information, go to paloaltonetworks.com and search 5G.
Advancements in technologies present federal agencies with both opportunities and challenges. At Verizon, we embrace those challenges. Verizon invests billions in our global networks every year to deliver secure data reliably. Our advanced communication solutions and modern call centers connect your workforce and citizens in the office, in the field, and internationally. We're committed to modernization that delivers better mission results faster. Verizon, we don't wait for the future, we build it. VerizonEnterprise.com/federalIT.
From a simple switch to 5G connectivity, solving federal networking challenges has never been easier with CommScope. We understand federal networks demand agility, reliability, and security to protect and serve our citizens. Whether the connection is wired, Wi-Fi, cellular, or all three at once, CommScope pushes what's possible, delivering superior network performance in any environment. Go to CommScope.com/federal to learn how our innovations help you achieve your mission.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Network. We're talking about 5G, and we're just getting ready to talk about specific use cases. I'm going to ask you, Dwayne, to give us an example of a use case of where this capability is rolling out at the U.S. Air Force.
All right, great. Well, you know, as we mentioned earlier, 5G is still at its very early stages, and most of the focus has been on the enhanced broadband capability, which is there already. And the really transformational aspects of 5G are the ones that are still coming, and that's the ability to connect to everything, the Internet of Things, as well as the extremely low latency, almost no delay. And I think where we see it, the kind of the closer range transformational opportunity I see in the commercial area is in factories, in terms of setting up a private network at a factory where you're able to capitalize on all aspects of that in a very secure environment. And if, for instance, you can see like Mercedes-Benz has already started this, where they can change the assembly line on the go. They have over 300 autonomous vehicles to bring in parts just when they need it. And then if with augmented reality glasses, the people on the floor can actually call up schematics and dashboards and do troubleshooting. Well, I see this similar type of application as we consider the flight line of the future. And we're looking at these use cases at HICM, Joint Base Pearl Harbor, HICM in Hawaii. And that's part of the DoD 5G test beds. And as I said, also we're trying to tap that into maybe in Tyndall Air Force Base. And so it's looking at how do we optimize the flight line and maintenance, especially. If you can capture the data that's coming down from the aircraft and the maintenance team has that ahead of time and able to bring the parts in time, use augmented reality to capture more data, as well as autonomous vehicles to bring the parts together and also control inventory, do preventive maintenance. There's so many different applications. So it's, again, this is where you see the real advantage of 5G. It's the ubiquitous nature of it, taking all these kind of disparate capabilities and bringing them all together and really having an impact on the mission.
Brian Wanger at Palo Alto Networks. You have you're in a unique situation like many of our partners, where you're seeing this sort of across the community. Give us one example of where you're seeing some early adoption of this capability, where you're able to sort of get in there and put this wrapper around it, if you will, that you described earlier in securing it.
Yeah, so Palo Alto, especially within our 5G team, we continue to have a joke that this is the first time in a lot of our careers that we've seen the government is actually leading the charge here. They're much further ahead than we've seen in a lot of the private sector industries, that they're adopting 5G much quicker. They seem to have a vision for the future that is a little bit more well-formed than we're seeing with some of the private sector organizations out there. So when we take a look at this, we're looking at sort of predominantly what's going on within the OTAs that the military and the Air Force has released to try to uncover their use cases. What Palo Alto kind of brings to bear there and what our vision is and how we're partnering with them is really based around this zero trust approach that's kind of taking off at a rapid pace within the government. Is we're looking at securing these environments and we're looking at doing it in a way that adds to kind of zero trust. And when we think about what zero trust means, it's kind of all about contextual information driving the access for what the users or the equipment or massive IoT devices have within the 5G environments. And what that really means for us at Palo Alto is how can we grab contextual information that's relevant for 5G and apply access and apply rights and apply network functions and policies based off of that. So what we're really looking to do through some of the efforts with these OTAs, as well as some of the Lab of Excellence that NIST and NCS NCCOE has developing, is how can we come up with policies and how can we grab the contextual information which is relevant to 5G, like subscriber IDs and network slice IDs, instead of relying on legacy technology like an IP address or a username. So we're really developing this zero trust approach, which is going to be specific to a 5G environment.
Major General Easley, I apologize. I think I cited you as Major Easley before. We're going to promote you back to General with no ceremony. Give us an example, specific example of what's going on at the U.S. Army. I know it's early adoption time, but I know that you all are in the middle of doing some of these capabilities. Can you give us an example of a program that you're rolling this out?
Sure. We're just like Dwayne said, again, we're looking at a lot of different use cases. This year, we've got two that I would like to highlight. One is, how do we take the same technology and make it work in our command posts and our training centers? Again, a command post is this real conglomeration of systems that need to come together to create this operation center that we can go fight our wars from. Again, we've got our logistics pieces coming in there, our fire control pieces, our personnel pieces, all these kind of different systems have to come together in real time so the commander can see the situation awareness and they can make a decision and get those orders out to these systems. As we add more robotic systems in there, the ground robotics or aerial systems, this kind of complicated network becomes even more complicated. So we see work at Fort Hood and at the National Training Center as some of those kind of key initiatives to be able to do that. But as we talked about from all these pieces, this doesn't come from free. There's a lot of work we have to do to make these different systems talk to each other. And we see a zero trust architecture as a way to do that. We know we've got to dynamically switch between a military provided network and a commercial network where we can. So when our soldier has a 5G endpoint, it's going to find the best route to be able to get that data, to be able to send that message through the system. So a lot of work that our network cross-functional team is doing, trying to figure out how to make that network of the future work for us.
Brian Shrumsky, how about at Verizon? Give us an example of a use case where you're rolling this capability out across the federal service.
Sure. So I'll stick on the military theme. One of the ones that we're very proud about, obviously we're participating in the OTAs and test beds, but I'll talk about real world use cases in our work at Miramar right now with Lieutenant Colonel Brandon Newell, where there's actually a commercial network deployed on the base. It's the first 5G millimeter wave network in the military from a commercial standpoint, where they're actually having a living lab. They're actually doing active testing, as Dwayne mentioned, on flight lines, where they actually have autonomous vehicles shuttling men and women around the flight line on an autonomous shuttle. There's an autonomous flatbed that's actually transporting autonomous drones. So you get a double there. And then they're also looking to use both the 5G and 4G network to do different things around base perimeter security. They're actually doing a lot of work on smart energy. They actually have a solar array there. They're actually using wireless connectivity to actually power that. But I think the beauty of that is it's a commercial network, and they're actually using what Brian mentioned in security and all those things over a commercial network. Obviously, we're actively participating. We can build private 4G and 5G networks, but you know, this is a real world deployment. This is not a test or experiment. They are doing testing experiment, but this is a fully functional world-class commercial network on a military installation in a highly congested. I think one of the things that I have a huge appreciation for the military in logistics is actually deploying a commercial network or a private network over a military installation and all the work that actually needs to do that, right? You have to coordinate with the FAA, right? And you're right outside of San Diego. This is not a remote facility. This is an urban environment. So all of that coordination with Verizon, working with the base leadership to do that is no easy feat. And they're taking advantage of that today of actually deploying and testing 5G services on a commercial network.
Dan, how about at CISA? You, again, have cited sort of this coordinated effort, that coordination effort that CISA plays. Give us an example, if you could, of where that's sort of coming into action in real time these days.
Sure. Thank you, Luke. So CISA doesn't have one use case 5G installation or use case that I can profile.
Of course.
What CISA does have, as you mentioned, is collaborative activities and partnerships with other federal agencies. We're collaborative in our discussions with DOD. Right now, we're looking at assessing the interoperability of networks for hardware and software for 5G. We'll look at the interoperability of 5G mobile devices, and we're also going to look at testing for and then closing the vulnerability to virtual networks within 5G. And then we're also going to look at autonomous vehicles operating using 5G capability. We're leveraging the new and existing use cases within the federal government to determine the risk landscape. We're not just looking in the federal government, we're also looking at what other organizations are doing in their 5G deployments, international partners, and what industry is doing. The Prague conference last year, and there'll be another one at the end of this year, great example of where our international partners come together and talk about some of their use cases. And we exchange the information and garner the lessons that we can, that they've learned. And then the same holds true. We share our information with our partners so that we can give them the risk mitigation. They can develop their risk mitigation for 5G deployments. We also do that through individual international engagements with specific countries. So we take the information from one stakeholder, the lessons learned, the best practices, the challenges. We validate that information, we analyze it, and we share it with other stakeholders so they can benefit from the secure 5G successes. And this is government to government, government to industry, and industry to government as well. We've partnered with the Federal Mobility Group to look at everything, how we evaluate 5G security, asking and answering the question, how secure is my 5G network? How do I know it is secure enough to carry out the mission? DHS also has a Critical Infrastructure Resiliency Institute. They have a computer program which looks at 5G infrastructure laydowns in various cities. Up until this point, they've been moving the 5G hardware around within a city to find optimization. And now we're connecting them with a real 5G bedown in Washington, D.C., to see if the efficiencies can be found within the city itself, rather than creating a simulated city and a simulated 5G bed down. So we're moving forward with learning those lessons as well. We've also partnered with the Federal Enterprise Mobility Security Group to look at application programming, interface APIs for traffic intelligence, fortifying federal mobility security networks, and then also detecting 5G-based drones. Through our partnerships with NSA and ODNI and participation in the Enduring Security Framework, we published a report on the potential threat vectors to the 5G infrastructure as it is now within government. It brings together the threats seen in the U.S. government 5G activities and includes that coherent answer that the other federal agencies are looking for as well. The next step for that group is to develop a follow-on report to highlight successful mitigations to those 5G threats. We put a lot of analysis, a lot of thought, and if required, put some policy changes in place to then mitigate the risk once the information is shared and analyzed. The federal government can't do it alone. We can establish security standards, we can put policies in place, but it'll take all the stakeholders to make a secure and resilient 5G capability.
Brian Kennedy, how about at CommScope? Can you give us a specific example of where you're seeing this capability rolling out?
Sure. Again, we're involved in a lot of the OTAs and test beds as well from an infrastructure perspective. I think when we one specific application that comes to mind is we have a C-RAN, a digital C-RAN antenna system that we're able to leverage within shipboard applications to ensure that the 5G signal can be propagated through the ship and that the folks on board can leverage their tablets and their phones while they're out at sea, as well as when they come back connecting to the terrestrial network. So that's one example. We also stay ahead on this connectivity perspective relative to C-band antennas. For instance, the development we're already beginning to ship antennas in preparation for the rollout of that. And we try to make sure we stay ahead with the connectivity. Fiber optic is another key area. We're seeing a lot of rich fiber backbone that has to go in to support, again, the 5G rollouts. But that's one specific one that comes to mind. We've got several other applications for private networks that we have as well that are being used, obviously, as the folks have already mentioned, switching from private back to public networks. It's just interesting transition times we're in. We're certainly happy to be a part of it.
Great use case there on this fantastic technology. Well, let's roll over to some lessons learned. I know it's early adoption, but even in early adoption, all of you right at the forefront here of enabling this capability, there's always things that get discovered, things that others that are going to follow behind you should be considering. General Easley, let's start with you and give us some lessons learned of the types of things that you're thinking about there.
Sure. One of the key pieces for our 5G rollout is really taking a system engineering approach. Understand those use cases, understand the architecture, understanding your data standards. What data are you pushing between those systems? But one thing we haven't talked about quite yet is cloud. How are you going to get data off of these endpoints moved into a cloud environment back? In the Army, we're rolling out what our internal cloud environment called C-Army. And that's what we see is kind of that key leverage is how do we get data straight from a 5G endpoint through the transport layer, again, either using commercial transport or our own private transport into our cloud environment to make analytical decisions there and then get those decisions pushed back to the edge. So that's how to replicate that and make that work over 50 different use cases is what we in the Army are planning to do over the next decade.
Fantastic. Dwayne, how about lessons learned from your perspective? What would you like to impart as far as wisdom on the community in regards to early adoption?
Right. I think actually this has been a great a model for the services working together and coordinating and communicating across organizations. And even with CISA as well, I'm part of the mobility, Federal Mobility Group. And we have a couple hundred people on that all across government. And so what I see what 5G is doing is it's really drawing within DoD all the different components together, and it's also drawing government all together, and it's drawing industry together. So I think we've never had something that has challenged our cultures to come together in such a way. Even I think of what 5G does, we're really combining the IT, information technology with OT, operational technology, and then with the defense industry. And these industries and have really operated as separate cultures and separate security kind of protocols and all. And 5G is forcing all of us to come together in very unique ways that I think is very healthy and has a big, huge benefit, much broader than just 5G itself.
Coordination very key to this whole aspect. Well, we're going to take another quick break and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Network.
Palo Alto Networks is proud to announce the industry's first 5G native security solution for the federal government, built to secure highly distributed cloud-native 5G networks. 5G networks enable new enterprise use cases, allowing for industrial-scale lot networks with ultra-low latency, mission-critical reliability, and a high degree of mobility. For more information, go to paloaltonetworks.com and search 5G.
Advancements in technologies present federal agencies with both opportunities and challenges. At Verizon, we embrace those challenges. Verizon invests billions in our global networks every year to deliver secure data reliably. Our advanced communication solutions and modern call centers connect your workforce and citizens in the office, in the field, and internationally. We're committed to modernization that delivers better mission results faster. Verizon, we don't wait for the future, we build it. VerizonEnterprise.com/federalIT.
From a simple switch to 5G connectivity, solving federal networking challenges has never been easier with CommScope. We understand federal networks demand agility, reliability, and security to protect and serve our citizens. Whether the connection is wired, Wi-Fi, cellular, or all three at once, CommScope pushes what's possible, delivering superior network performance in any environment. Go to CommScope.com/federal to learn how our innovations help you achieve your mission.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Network. We're talking about 5G, and we were just talking about lessons learned. Dan, I was going to throw it over to you. Top lesson learned that you're seeing so far.
Well, I want to talk lessons learned with regards to the benefits that 5G is providing the government and will provide the government. You go beyond smart everything. You get a better government workforce, especially when you are working from home. You get better cybersecurity with that 5G capability. But with that, you're also going to get an increased attack surface for malicious actors because you're introducing new vulnerabilities. 5G is dynamic. You're getting attempts by threat actors to influence the design and architecture of 5G networks. That's primarily through standards building, international standards building. We're seeing with the current 5G deployments that leveraging legacy infrastructure and untrusted components brings its own set of vulnerabilities. And then the other lesson learned we're finding out is that limited competition in the 5G marketplace results in more proprietary solutions from untrusted vendors.
A lot of things to think about as we're looking at rolling out this capability. General Easley, top priority for the Army this year?
Top priority goes back to our zero trust architecture and really understanding how our network boundary changes with 5G. This concept of a static perimeter defense no longer works in the 5G architecture. And this, we have to understand this porous nature of the network. As devices enter into it at the periphery, we kind of see them, we sense them, and we know what level of security we can give them from that standpoint. So that's really kind of our thinking point there, is how do we make these work? I mean, again, both for our kind of private infrastructure and then and the commercial infrastructure.
Need to focus on that that framework. Dwayne, top priority at the Air Force this year?
I think testing it out. The DoD has provided, Congress has provided a huge amount of funding for DoD to lead our country for innovation and our impact our economy and our industry by using the DoD 5G test beds. And all the services are actively engaged in this. And so it's testing it out and proving it in so that we can have confidence to deploy it.
Shake it down so you can scale it. Dan, top priority for CISA this year?
We're focused on secure and resilient 5G implementation worldwide. Secure and resilient is key, and that's where we're trying to take the rest of our region and the rest of the world. We need to keep the information sharing going and increase it, building our collaboration with our international partners, with our federal partners and government partners at the states, localities, tribes, and territories. We also need to improve software supply chain security for 5G. The primes, the developers, the vendors will need to maintain greater visibility into their software and maintain security data, make it more publicly available.
Supply chain, very key.
Year, we won't get there this year, but it is my priority to move the needle in that direction.
Absolutely, it's a journey. Brian, top priority at Verizon this year for 5G?
Keeping up with demand is our number one priority. Seriously, is actually rolling out the C-band, right? So getting that C-band spectrum online as quickly as possible. By the end of this year, that will actually start a three-year process. So that's our top priority right now.
Top lesson learned?
Top lesson learned, I would say, as it was mentioned earlier, we launched 5G commercially on April 3rd, 2019. We started planning in 2017, right? So it is a marathon, not a sprint. And I would say what I'm learning now, there's still some evolution in the network as we go to standalone core. And the other thing that I'm also seeing, lesson learned, the ecosystem is starting to be built out. And I'm not talking about the network infrastructure, as Dan's mentioning. We're starting to see the UE or end user devices beyond just smartphones and tablets, that we get to more industrial IoT devices that are going to encompass 5G. Very excited about that. And I think that's a lesson learned, that ecosystem is still, and it's a little immature right now, that it's going to grow out at the end of this year going into 22.
Fantastic. Brian, top lesson learned at Palo Alto Networks?
Yeah, I'd say the top lesson that we're learning right now is when we look at the way that some of these federal programs have gotten structured, we found that collaboration is key. Dwayne was making some points that we're seeing a convergence of a lot of different types of technologies with 5G. We're seeing that infrastructure is converging with applications, is converging with telecommunications, all into a single platform. And we look at how the federal agencies are kind of adopting this. I think that a GoCo model is extremely important here, because it gives the government the opportunity to have flexibility in the way that they deploy this. Instead of having a system integrator not working as closely with an application provider or an infrastructure provider because they own the equipment, when it's something that the federal government owns, it allows for a lot more flexibility going forward. So that flexibility is kind of what allows the collaboration between industry and government and different subject matter expertise. So I think our biggest lesson learned is that we need to be constantly collaborating with the other OEMs in the space, the other system integrators, the other service providers like Verizon, and most importantly, with all of our federal partners that are going to be using this 5G technology going forward.
Very good point you make there. How about top priority for Palo Alto?
Yeah, as you would expect, I think our top priority is enabling our customers to be successful. And that's whether it's the service providers out there like Verizon, or whether it's our federal customers like we see with the Air Force or some of the other big DoD entities. We need to make sure that as they're charging forward and they're leading the charge, even in front of private sector, that we're supporting them in the best way we can from a security perspective. Some of those initiatives that we've prioritized is coming up with our own reference architecture, which is an extension of what the DoD has recommended for Zero Trust. Mm-hmm. So we can help come up with guidelines to implement Zero Trust or implement 5G securely. Some of it comes with partnering with some of the other OEMs in the space to make sure that we have proof points behind partnerships and what a reference architecture would look like from a security vendor into a telecommunication provider. And obviously it comes with partnerships that we've developed with Verizon and some of the other big providers out there to make sure that our security can be deployed inside of their environments to help secure these 5G infrastructures as they go forward.
Partnering collaboration, very key. Brian, CommScope, top lesson learned.
I think the top lessons learned that we've seen are it's definitely not happening overnight. It's an evolution, not a revolution, right? You know, typically these transitions take a long time, and 5G, although it's fantastic and it's going to stabilize, and as we said, it's still in its infancy, 4G is going to be the backbone for a long time to come, and mm-hmm. and we see that as being a lesson learned there for sure. You know, we need to evaluate the current infrastructure and its support capabilities and implement the appropriate upgrades to ensure that the infrastructure can support this this new evolution that is underway right now. And I definitely echo the collaboration, with other OEMs as well as the providers, the operating companies, because, you know, when you think about this, we're not only as each of the previous Gs were solved a problem. You define the standards and then you built the product and you tested the product and implemented the product. 5G seems to be one that's happening all in parallel, everything parallel across as we move down through this journey. And so it makes it difficult, especially when you add on top of that where we are in today's environment with making things more virtualized and going to a more cloud experience. It just adds even more complexity to the entire story of developing 5G as we see it. So those seem to be some of the lessons learned. We try to stay ahead of that at CommScope and make sure that we are providing our customers with solutions that help meet the need at the time. And we have a saying now meets next. We're trying to make sure that we're here today with solutions that help today, but also provide that forward thinking and looking view that'll get us that end solution when the time is right and we get there.
And speaking of next, let's talk about next. So give us your top priority of this year. Paint a picture of the future right behind that. What's it look like from CommScope's perspective?
Yeah, I think our top priority is definitely supporting our Fed customers with network modernization across all aspects of connectivity, including the physical network infrastructure, fiber, as we mentioned, fiber-rich backbones from a broadband perspective, the mass traffic, but the needs at the edge also. The unlicensed spectrum, I think, is a key priority. We're seeing more and more private networks working in conjunction with public networks. As we see things like Wi-Fi 6 and Wi-Fi 6E come into play, those are going to be, key focused areas and priorities for us. The last mile, I think, is going to be key from a power and communication and edge device perspective we're going to need to stay focused on. So those are some of the areas that we're extremely focused on to ensure we have solution sets ready for our customers.
We really do appreciate that. Brian, how about at Palo Alto Networks? What's it look like in a couple of years? What's the demand signal out there right now?
So I wouldn't even say a couple of years down the line. I mean, when we look at what the future is going to look like with 5G, I think it was Matt who was highlighting a few use cases that automation is going to be key with 5G. And we see that as kind of a major component of the security aspect of it as well. When we look at how security is going to be implemented going forward, it can't be something that's a manual process with only operators and manual analyst sitting in front of a computer. It needs to be something that's automated using software. And that's what we're starting to bake into our technology now. And it's certainly somewhere where we're researching and we're looking to continue to go down that line in the future, is we need to find a better way to do dynamic threat correlation. We need to find a better way to execute controls against potential threats right now, not in 2 hours or 4 hours or 2 days from now. So what we really see is the future for security with 5G is leveraging automation, leveraging machine learning to have better utilization of the software and make sure that threats are isolated as soon as they're uncovered, not waiting hours to do so. So I'd say automation, machine learning is where we really see the future going with 5G.
Brian, how about at Verizon? What's it look like in a couple of years? Are we going to be fully 5G enabled across the country at that point?
Yeah, we are in some cases today, Luke, and 2023 is our goal to get the C-band auction fully deployed, right? Mm-hmm. We actually have made that we're also decommissioning in that time frame, right? So don't forget about that. That's 3G in some aspects. But I would also say here, as we talk about 5G and those immersive experiences, right, where we're talking about next generation warfare, the warehouse, right, that's going to take some time. We're starting to see that today. We're operating a commercial network. We're building private networks, and actually that's a differentiator for us. We can actually bridge both. But I also, I'd be remiss to say, hey, people are already experiencing 5G today on mobile devices, right, their smartphones. One of the other near-term ones is actually 5G in terms of business internet or providing broadband access in a lot of areas or underserved areas, right? We see that as an immediate need and an actually immediate deployment later this year, where you'll actually use 5G to provide broadband access to a military installation or a federal remote agency work location. You will actually see that in 21 and early 22. So on top of all the other stuff that we're talking about, the immersive learning, the OTAs and all those test beds, but and then the edge compute, obviously. And the other thing too I want to mention is on the edge compute, we'll work on 4G technology, right? As Brian Kennedy just mentioned, 4G is going to be a backbone for the foreseeable future. And we see a lot of use cases today that are actually using private LTE with edge compute. So as I like to say it, you have a lot of different Lego blocks in terms of 5G, and how the agencies are actually consume them are actually, it's not going to be absolute and say I'm in 5G. The question really is, there's going to be many different ways how I'm going to consume 5G. What do I want to do, right? And never before did you have those options.
Dan, you've got to wrestle all this together and make sure that everyone's communicating and making sure all these lessons learned and research and analysis, et cetera, stitches together as this Wild West continues. Tell us what that's going to look like over the next couple of years. What's sort of the goal there?
Well, no doubt that we're going to see a continued growth in 5G utilization, a beneficial growth in communications through 5G networks worldwide. And the federal government's no exception to that. We're going to see advancements in open radio access network or ORAN concepts to increase interoperability with more vendors and in the 5G marketplace. ORAN opens protocols and interfaces between subcomponents, which means computing power can be pushed from a core element to the edge closer to the user. And that's gonna increase network agility, it's gonna increase flexibility, and it's gonna decrease costs. It also means that there's a potential for insertion of untrusted components within the RAN, which will negate security advantages. So while our government is moving in that direction, like 5G, ORAN is dynamic, and we're going to see some security challenges that need to be mitigated. The CISA, by the way, has two publications, the Edge product and then a risk characterization product. Both of them look at 5G risks and in an ORAN environment from different perspectives. They're publicly available on the CISA 5G website, cisa.gov/5G. We're also going to see zero trust as a growth. You know, it's an important element for secure 5G. Zero trust is not a tool. It's not a single product. It's a security model. It's a set of system design principles and a coordinated cybersecurity and system management strategy. CISA was a part of developing the NIST special publication for zero trust architecture last year. I know the Defense Information Systems Agency recently published its zero trust reference architecture. DoD is increasing funding for zero trust architectures. And you're gonna see more of a growth of that in the next 1 to 3 years or 2 years. Software assurance and supply chain assurance A lot of that comes from lessons learned from recent events, but it's also been a growing risk that we've been trying to mitigate for several years at CISA. It was critical before SolarWinds, and it's moved to the forefront now for cybersecurity on the radar. So those are four areas where you will see growth and movement towards in the next few years.
We really appreciate everything that CISA's doing to pull all this together as we all go on this journey. Dwayne, how about the Air Force? What does that look like in a couple of years? If I'm a pilot coming out of the Air Force Academy, what can I expect in a couple of years?
So 5G is visionary, and I think it's achievable. We talked about some of these use cases, but what I want to really focus in on where we're going to get to the future is back to security. And it's interesting that this comes up often. We have a panel full of security experts, and our commanders are, as much as they want the advanced technology use cases, they're not going to roll it out until they have some confidence related to security. So I think the things that we need to do related to that is, one is design security in from the beginning. Design is so critical that we look at the big picture. Again, 5G was designed with security in mind. And so there are some advantages, but there are also all these different vulnerabilities that'll be new because of the architecture that we need to address. And this whole team has been talking about how we're gonna address that. But so that's part of the foundation is design. Then trusted partners, trusted vendors that we really, establish those that we can, who really understand the security aspects, and we bring that into it. Next is testing. This is a real key area, is that we're testing across the board, and then rollout, and that's rollout in phases. Is, you know, I think 5G is going to be taking place over this whole next decade. Let's not wait to the end of the decade to get to realize all these capabilities. As soon as they're available, as soon as they've been tested out, as soon as we have that security confidence, we need to move forward with it. And so I think that's where all of this team has been kind of teaming up and saying, this is where we need to go, is getting to that point where we can deploy these things quickly and confidently.
General Easley, speaking of security, take us home. What does it look like to the soldier, to the Army at large in a couple of years? What's the goal at this point?
Well, again, as all the panelists have talked about, we see 5G as transformational across a whole broad spectrum of areas, from our hospitals, from our logistics systems, to our training systems, to our command posts. It will become the next key infrastructure for our warfighting systems. But as we talked, it's a whole series of things that have to come together. It's the network, it's the applications, it's the infrastructure, it's the software, it's the data, it's all these pieces to that need to come together into these operating systems. We know that our workforce of today is not ready to take ownership of those systems. So one of our kind of key initiatives, both in the Army and the rest of the DoD, is how do we upskill our workforce to work in this new ecosystem and all the different pieces that come together. So, I mean, I'd love to talk security, and as we all know, security is critically important to do this, the tools, the infrastructure, but it's also our people. And we have to look at how do we move our people into this new type of systems to, again, manage that data, manage the applications, manage the infrastructure, working with our commercial partners, working with the rest of the government to make these systems come to life.
As we advance the technology, we have to advance the skill sets as well. And that was a beautiful way to end it on the people. I'd like to thank all of you for your service and for all the guests for taking the time out of their busy schedules to join us for the program. I'd like to thank our sponsors for supporting us on this show. I'd like to thank the good people here at Federal News Network that make the program so successful and enjoyable. And most of all, I'd like to thank the listening audience out there that tune in every month. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Network.
Thank you for listening to the Federal Executive Forum series on Federal News Network. This show was produced by Trezza Media Group. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsnetwork.com.